I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 591. The deluxe version is a battle royale with cheese. This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the original.
The fucking original.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi.
Girl, how you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah, you good, good? Or you like good?
I'm good.
Okay.
Like, I'm black good. I'm good, okay. I'm good. Mm-hmm. Good without you.
Kanye, I'm good. Or, like... You know, when he wasn't crazy?
He was never not crazy. Let's be real.
You right, but...
Hey, we all have our journeys.
Look, we all have our journeys, we all have our demons, we all have, you know, the stuff that we're going through. We say dumb shit from time to time and things like
that. I say dumb shit all the time. It's kind of part of my charm.
I mean, it is definitely part of your charm. It's not kind of part of your charm. It's definitely part of your charm. Okay? But you do it in a cute way. And when you're wrong, you own that you're wrong. And you accept, you know, the factual.
Yeah. Well, there's no... Yeah. You only get smarter by rejecting the dumb, right? So, like, if dumb comes out and you realize that it's dumb...
Reject the dumb.
Like, you gotta expel it. Like, I feel like when I say something dumb, it's because I'm exercising it out of my soul. So then it's out and it gets purged. And then when the correct knowledge gets absorbed into me, I then
become... You make room to accept the truth because you have exercised the dumb.
Exercise the dumb, accept the smart. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what it feels like to me.
I feel like there should be a movement. I wish that more people would join...
Hashtag reject the dumb movement.
So let's get that trending out there, Twitter. Okay, I'm looking at you guys to make this happen. Because I feel like there's just, like, a lot of dumb going on. And it's been really difficult for me to enjoy, like, the things that I enjoy, like anime and video games. Like, I haven't picked up a game all week.
Wow.
And, so that should tell you, like, where I'm living right now.
In Sadville, that's where you're living.
I have not put hand on controller to play a game for an entire 7-day spread. So,
wow,
that is real.
That's pretty damn sad, sis. Like,
yeah, it is. So I gotta fix it. But I've just been like in such a funk because of like everything that's going on in the world, and then like everything that's going on with my job, and then the day job, and you know I'm still sifting through E3 emails as you know everybody on the team is, and trying to you know find those things that I want to talk about that haven't already been talked about yet, like. By us a billion and a half times already, or other people. Like, at this point, I think it's pretty clear that I'm sold on Anthem, I'm sold on Beyond Good and Evil 2, I'm sold on the Assassin's Creed game, I'm sold on a bunch of different things. Like, I'm definitely in on Kingdom Hearts 3. I definitely want to see what Sea of Solitude is all about. I'm in for that. You know, I think that the additional Cuphead content is really cool. I like that they made the chalice that you were saving in the mausoleums is a playable character. You know, so you've got the two mug dudes and now a chick that you can play in the game. I think that's really interesting, and I'm glad to see Studio MDHR doing more stuff. There were a bunch of peripherals that were announced, and I still haven't done, like, all my due diligence on those. You know, there's more headsets coming to the market. Everybody's upping their lines and custom editions of this and that and the other thing. You know, Astro's got a new TR series that they're releasing, which has slightly better audio and is really just a special edition color combination, stuff like that. I'm pretty much in Lucid's camp, though, right now.
Me too. Fucking pillows, marshmallows for your head.
Yeah, like the Lucid Sound headset, I'll be honest with you, it is pretty much my day in, day out headset now.
It's just super comfortable.
Because it's so comfortable, you know, and I can do it for hours. And so, you know, if you watch me stream, when I stream, those are the headsets that you're going to see me wearing, the LS30s. I think we're actually going to give some away here probably in September. Right at the end of August, the beginning of September, we'll kind of do it, the kickoff fall. But we're going to give away a pair of LS30s, which are a wireless headset from Lucid Sound. So definitely keep track of our social, because we'll announce what we're doing for the giveaway there. But you could win a pair.
I got a lot of looks, and I had a couple people when I was out on my vacation, because I had them at the airport.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, are those good? I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm like, and these are not just, you know, audio. Like, this is my gaming headset. I just didn't bring all the peripherals for it because I was giving mad love to Lucid Sound going across the nation.
It's a great product, you know, and they are very easy to travel with.
Oh, yeah. They just sat on my neck, and I was like, yeah, Lucid Sound. That's what it says right there on the band. Ba-chicka-pow.
Yeah, I've got their sticker up on my board that I am going to be filling with stickers and pins behind me for when I stream. I love the comfort. Like, I can wear them for, you know, 6 or 7 hours on my head. They don't pinch my head, and they just feel really comfortable. So it's pretty much my, like, go-to headset at this point. I am waiting, though, for a true wireless headset across the board, because I do have to connect to the chat pad on my Xbox in order to be able to use the mic.
Mm-hmm.
So to stream and to do chat, I still have to be connected to the controller, which I don't like. Like, I really want a truly wireless, I can sit on my couch, recline, leave the room if I need to.
And not miss out on what's happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which I have that with my Astro 850s on my PlayStation side. I don't have it on the Xbox side, so I've always had to use the chat pad. I keep saying chat pad, but the mic chat adapter for my Xbox controller. So I'm really looking forward to Lucid coming up with a solution that's completely wireless that supports mic, because that'll be the next headset I get, and that'll be pretty much it for me, for headsets, as far as gaming goes.
Well, until we get into that future where literally all of it's built into our brains and we won't need physical proofs at all.
Right, and so that's what I mean. That's it for me for headsets, because, like, once I have, like, my true wireless headset for my Xbox, I'm golden. Because I already have, you know, my... I still use an Astro set with my PlayStation. And I don't really do a lot of chat with that other than when I'm playing Destiny with friends, because most of the games that I play on my PlayStation are single player.
Right.
Experiences. So I don't really need chat. Like, I'm playing God of
War. Chat's a suggestion, not a requirement.
I'm playing Destiny. Like, I don't really play a lot of multiplayer games on my PlayStation. I do most of my multiplayer. Let me rephrase that. Yeah, really, most of my multiplayer, because I do still play Destiny with Strikes, so I end up playing with some other people in Strikes, but even at that, I'm usually never on mic, because I just have bad experiences on mic more times than not when I'm not playing with friends, as I've talked about before in the podcast, and I'm really looking forward to the day that that changes, because I do think that will open up my multiplayer world a bunch, but the majority of my multiplayer experience I do where I would be on mic is on my Xbox, because that's where I played Division, that's where I used to play Call of Duty for the brief period in time that I could play Call of Duty as a woman and not be harassed, but it's where I play Overwatch, it's where I play very poorly Fortnite.
I haven't even gotten into Fortnite yet.
I've played a little bit of Fortnite. I enjoy it when I play, but I tend to play the single player campaign. Just because for me, the Battle Royale side, the multiplayer side, is just so much going on, I can't successfully keep up. Like, tearing down buildings is fun, you know, picking where you're going to land, defining resources, doing the resource hunt, that's fun, you know, when you're playing on a team as opposed to everybody out for themselves. Because then the game really is jump down and just hope to God that you're the first one to find a gun. But when it starts getting down to, like, I would say probably around the realm of, like, 20 people left, it's where I become frazzled, because then it really is about being able to build a good enough fort or, you know, barrier around yourself. So you're using buttons to build and construct, and you're having to pick what pieces you want to put where. So you're having to navigate what's a solid wall, what's a brick wall, what's a wood wall, and then how to actually build stuff around you. And at the same time, people are shooting at you, so you're trying not to take too much damage, so you're trying to build that really fast, and then hopefully have enough weapons to, if you've surrounded yourself well and built up enough, that you can get high enough to be looking down on everyone to take them out. I struggle with identifying the right building resources, and I think it's just because I'm so deep a strategy person that I take too much time to think about what it is that I want to build, that by the time I figure out what it is I want to build and I start building it, I'm already now swamped by people trying to take me out. Mm-hmm. And so I can't defend myself and attack and build a fort fast enough at the same time. Like, I just can't process all of that fast enough. And so I just end up getting shanked. And that's just no fun.
That's no fun.
So, for me, because I feel like it's a wall that I can't get past.
Right.
And so I just go back into the single player where I'm going against computer AI and I have specific mission critical things, you know, that I'm trying to do. So specific traps and buildings that I need to build to ward off hordes of things, that I enjoy more because that does give me enough time to think of what resources I need, what I want to have, where I want to put them, that kind of thing, as opposed to just kind of what feels like the manic nature of the other side of the Battle Royale, which Battle Royale should feel manic. I don't perform well in it, so I don't enjoy that side of Fortnite. But that's just me. That being said, I love the environment, though. Like, I will spectate everybody else after I die. So I end up enjoying watching people play the Battle Royale side.
I mean, I'm more interested in the lore. Like, because there's been a lot of theories as to, like, where is this taking place? When is this taking place? What is the deal? And so, I mean, I've really kind of taken a step back from wanting to be the facilitator of the narrative to being, like, a spectator who just wants to experience the narrative.
And I think that's just because we've had a lot of really good narrative experience games now, where, and frankly, we're also a little bit older than we used to be, so I don't have to be the center of the attention of the world.
Oh my god, it's not about me anymore?
It doesn't have to be about me all the time. I can actually enjoy it being about somebody else. And I think that's kind of like where I've fallen in with like all the Battle Royale games that are really big right now. Like, I respect Battle Royale a lot. I think that there's a lot that it has to offer the community because it does allow more people to play with each other. You know, because you have these, you know, 25-on-25 situations now. And that's an amazing feat to be able to accomplish. To matchmake and have things run really well, you know. And so I tip my hat to the PUBGs and the Fortnites and, you know, even the Overwatches of the world, right? Because that's, you know, multiplayer, you know, 6-on-6. So that is, you know, kind of like a mini battle royale with cheese. I enjoy watching people play those games. You know, I think that's part of the reason why, you know, I've started to enjoy esports more over the last few years, similar to you, is I don't have to be the person in charge of the character to enjoy watching things unfold. I definitely enjoy being a spectator.
I think we've gone from a very active stance to a very passive stance.
Yeah, I hate the word passive.
I know, but I'm just saying, like you said, like, it's not like, oh god, I have to play this game because I need to don the shoes and I have to go through this, like, don't get me wrong, I still enjoy doing that because I clearly still play games, but at the same mm-hmm. time, like, case in point, like, I just finished my first playthrough of Detroit, and right. I'm going to, you know, platinum trophy it, but I mean, I'm taking my time now. Mm. Like what I did with Heavy Rain, like literally as soon as I got through it, I was like, I need to play more of this. I wanted to go through all that then. I wanted to get that absorption then. I had to have it now. And now
I had to take a week off.
Like, but I got obsessive, and I have to say that because I mean, I know that I have a tendency to get addicted to things. Yep. And you know, now I know, or I can feel when I'm getting too attached to something.
You recognize when it's happening.
Right. I should slowly draw myself back. And I mean, when I jumped into Detroit, like, and I mean, I absolutely love it. And like I said, I'm going to platinum it. But at the same time, I'm not like, oh God, I have to do this now. I have to get through this now. And I've taken a step back since my first playthrough, and I'm probably about a third way through my second right now. But I don't feel like, oh God, like I don't have that fear of missing out that I had with Heavy Rain. Because I can just go back and be like, I can take my time with this because this story is waiting for me. It doesn't go anywhere until I show up. The party don't start till I walk in. Don't stop.
Truth.
So I don't have to rush. And I think that was just something about youth where you felt it was immediate and it had to be in the moment and it had to be now. And now being a little bit older, I'm like, yeah, I can wait a little bit. It's not the end of the world if I don't get this done by a certain time. It's not like the game will evaporate and I won't have a chance to do it anymore.
And I also think that it's also because, frankly, you know, Let's Plays have become such a core staple, at least for me, in my gaming experience, that I have a core group of YouTubers who do Let's Plays and walkthroughs that I watch because I find that I tend to have similar opinions and emotional reactions or just reactions in general to games similar to them. So I feel like if they enjoy a game, then I'll probably enjoy that same game because we have similar tastes, right? And so I find that there's a lot of games that, frankly, I would not play because they don't seem like they would be up my alley.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a really interesting experience for me when any of those YouTubers play those games because I feel like vicariously we're doing it together. So I get to experience these games that I would not play myself, like Until Dawn, right? Like, I watched you play a little bit here at the house, and then I was like, yeah, that's really not for me, because, again, jump scares are not pleasurable in any sense of the word for me, in any medium. I do not like them. They do not make me comfortable, and I'm just too old and set in my ways, and I said that, so you can clip that, Mr. Producer Man, and use it at a later time, but I am set in my ways in that I never find jump scares enjoyable. They always take me completely out of the experience, and then I'm no longer able to enjoy the experience because now I'm watching for more jump scares. That's how uncomfortable they make me. And so I don't typically play horror games or survival horror games specifically for those reasons. Because that's, you know, a cheap and easy way to build drama and conflict. And I get it as a mechanism, and that's cool. But I don't enjoy them. I don't enjoy them in games. I don't enjoy them in movies. I don't enjoy them in TV shows. It's just a thing that I personally do not enjoy. However, I do find that I enjoy watching some of those YouTubers do Let's Plays of those games that I would not play. Like, I still don't watch anybody play Outlast. I have attempted, and about 20 minutes in, I was like, yeah, no, seriously. Still, fuck this experience, and walked away from it. But there are other games that, you know, I have enjoyed watching people play. Like, I would not have played the last Resident Evil game. It's absolutely stunning, and I love how well they put together the story.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. In 7?
No, who are you telling? I think I talked about it immensely.
Yep. Okay, it was really fantastic, and I enjoyed watching other YouTubers play it, and that game is absolutely filled with jump scares, but for some reason, and I think because it was because of the story, that being removed as far as not controlling the controller, I was able to watch YouTubers play it and take it in almost as a cinematic movie and less as a video game. And therefore, I was able to actually enjoy it. So I actually watched 3 different YouTubers play through the game because I wanted to see their reactions. And they were all playing it differently. Like, one was playing on PC, one was playing on a console, one was playing on VR. Up until
getting
their hand lopped off, and then they were like, "Nope."
Yeah, see, it can't. I one, we already know my stance on VR and how I've had a hard time assimilating into games that use VR as a function because of motion sickness and I don't know whatever the fuck other reasons I have. But I don't know if I'll ever get to that point where in my survival horror or escapist horror or survivalist horror, whatever horror bucket you want to put your horror game in, that I don't think I will ever feel the need that it needs to be so immersed that I am putting, and I'm using this not correctly, but I don't want to feel like I am putting my body up.
Yep.
Because that's kind of that's the great thing about games, is that you're able to assume this role without any consequence to you. And granted, we've had several movies, horrible game movies, about this very concept.
Yeah.
And, I mean, is it something that will happen in our future? Maybe, I don't know. But if it does, okay, I'll be ready to cross that moral bridge when it comes to it. But I like not having my body on the line for this. And I feel like the thing about VR, which is kind of like that line for some people, is they want that immersion, some people don't. I like the idea that I can sit on my couch, all curled up, and like, okay, so my Connor gets shot in the face. All right, well, I didn't get shot in the face. But if you're playing this in a VR stance, you will feel as if you are taking that shot to the face. And there have been several studies that I've seen come out where they've tested people and, like, they had somebody hold their hand on one side of a screen and then had their hand and a fake hand on the same side, and they were stroking the fake hand, and that person couldn't see it, but they were feeling the stimulus from their actual hand that was being stimulated. So randomly a person would take like a knife or like a pen and would then stab the fake hand. And literally the person has assimilated that this fake hand is their hand, and they've pulled both their hands away, even though their actual hand was never in danger of being stabbed. And I'm like, right, yeah.
Because if you're, you know, hitting all my senses with this is what is around me, you are immersed in that, and so your senses are telling you that this is all around you. So this is
right.
Your
Someone's going to stab your hand.
Taking
move
it in. Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So like,
yeah.
I don't need that. And I think in our country where we have a lot of
you don't need it.
I don't. And I think where we have a lot of people who have, you know, sensitivities and medical stipulations, that we don't need to be putting them in situations where, you know, how terrible would it be if someone was doing VR and got so scared that they literally, like, had an arrhythmia or, like, had a heart attack or, like, started going into a stroke. And, like, ooh, the liabilities on that alone are far more terrifying than anything I can think of that would pop out at me. And true, I don't need that. I don't need it.
Right.
Don't need it.
I think that, you know, it's a slippery slope that we have to be very smart in how we navigate, right? You know, it's like when you go to an amusement park, you know, they have the signs for different rides that, like, hey, you got to be this tall and don't ride this ride if you have this condition or that condition. You know, the same thing has to be said for video games. You know, if you are battling and trying to deal with, you know, things like PTSD or, you know, just even heavy emotional states, which we all go through for sure, you know, there are certain games that you probably should not play because it won't be entertainment for you. It may be triggering for you. You know,
right.
When I'm having like down periods for myself, you know, because I deal with depression and sometimes I deal really well with it and sometimes I don't. And I know for me, like when I'm in a bad, bad place, I absolutely stay away from video games. And the reason that I do that is because for so many games that I enjoy playing, many of them will not help me get out of that dark place, because I do tend to enjoy darker stories, more stories filled with conflict, gameplay that is filled with conflict, because I like games that find a way to overcome those hurdles. But still, they're heavily dark stories. They're, you know, the stories that I enjoy the most, especially in anime, are ones that, you know, are quite sad. And so when I'm in that space, I know that those are things that I have to stay away from. And it's not just in games that I stay away from it. It's also, you know, in my entertainment as a whole. You know, there are times when, you know, I'm having a bad spell, and I'm trying to figure my way out through it. There are certain shows that I won't watch. There's certain movies that I will not watch. There's, you know, certain music that I will not listen to, because in those places, I know that I am more susceptible to go even deeper by interpreting those things poorly,
mm-hmm.
and not using them well. And so, you know, part of that is definitely on me to recognize those things, but also to get the help to get past them. And, you know, I do. And, you know, knock wood, so far so good. You know, and more times than not, I'm able to, over time, get myself out of those spaces. And then I go right back into those things that I enjoy. And they bring me joy, and they bring me release, and I have great experiences with them, and I get to come on the show and talk about them and all those kinds of things. But I agree with you. You know, it's part of the, for me personally, it's part of the reason why I have not delved 100% deep into VR, because, you know, when I've tested games in VR, I've had that exact experience, because you're completely immersed in this space. Your only thing that you can see visually is what is presented to you by the game you're now playing. Because of the headphones that are on, you know, and most of those are noise-canceling systems, the only sounds you hear are the sounds in the environment of the game. And so you have hand controls that you're using, and those hand controls, when you move, have an effect and move something in visually in what you're seeing. So almost instantaneously, when playing a VR experience, you are immersed in that space. And so if that is not a safe space for you to be in, for whatever your personal reasons are, it's just going to exacerbate that. Like, there's no way ever that I would be able to handle a jump scare that came to me in a VR experience.
Yeah, it's just... I feel like you have to have the strongest resolve. And I mean, I know there are people out there who completely have that, and I'm very envious of them, but I know that that's just not me. I'm just not built that way. So I don't feel I'll ever immerse myself in that particular manner, but I will still find ways to feel like I am immersed in the universe, the narrative that I am playing through. Like, I will still find that enjoyment, that I don't need to be fully jacked in to have the same kind of resonance as someone who does. Like, to each their effing own.
Exactly. It doesn't have to be the Matrix. Like, I'm not trying to be Neo and have that experience. If they make that experience for people, great. That's not an experience that I'm looking for. Right now, what I'm really enjoying is great narrative storytelling that immerses me and makes me connect with the character, because the character resonates with me on some level. And that then makes me want to complete the story, because I want to see what happens with this character and how they develop. It's one of the reasons why I'm super excited about the new Tomb Raider game. You know, I've really loved everything that Crystal Dynamics has been doing with the whole reboot of the franchise. I think that this Lara Croft is probably the most enjoyable Lara Croft experience that I've had in the entirety of the franchise. And I've played almost all of the Lara Croft games.
Yeah, I know you have.
Games.
You guys have been homies for a long time.
We've been down for like a hot second. I mean, Lara, my girl. I think the only thing I didn't play was the top-down mobile game.
Mm-hmm. Osiris, was that Temple of Osiris?
Yeah, that's the only one that I didn't play. And that's just because I don't tend to enjoy top-down strategy games. Like, really the only top-down thing that I've ever enjoyed in my life has been Ms. Pac-Man on tabletop console and Bomberman. That's just me being real, because I like to be real. I don't like to be phony. So that just, like, wasn't my jam, so I didn't pick it up. I really do think that they have done a fantastic job of arcing Lara's story and really helping you see how a privileged young woman, basically... You know, yes, she lost her parents, but, you know, Croft Manor, it's pretty all right if you got to grow up someplace.
I mean, if I had a choice,
picking destinies, I'm just saying, like, it's not all bad.
Right.
Didn't have to worry about school or education or food and, you know.
Oh, man, living the fucking dream.
You know what I'm saying? But we're able to arc this, how does this privileged person who didn't have a care in the world, so really didn't need to learn how to fight or defend themselves, so how on earth did this young woman become the character that we've known for a long time and loved, who is confident, smart, witty, a fantastic fighter, deadly dual-wielding pistols. Like, how do you go from one extreme to this other extreme? And I really do think that through, you know, the last two games, that they've really done a great job of presenting, so here's how this evolution happened of this character. And it's believable, you know, and I give Crystal Dynamics the credit because, you know, the mechanic that I hate the most in the game, though, makes the most sense of when you do fuck up, the consequence of that is brutal. And so when Lara dies an early brutal death because I didn't hit the prompts correctly or things like that, I do feel like I'm responsible for her not making it through.
That is on you.
And so it makes me want to get good so that I don't put her through that anymore. And I'm talking about pixels. And when you have made me refer to a group collection of colors on a screen, in my mind, that is a person and I am responsible for their safety, then you have done a really great job of creating a character that resonates with me in an environment that feels less like linear navigation and really is a story that I'm immersed in. And the entire team has done a really fantastic job. And so I'm really excited to see what this next chapter entails and how Lara changes and grows in this chapter. So I'm really excited for Shadow of the Tomb Raider. You know, the gameplay stuff that I saw from E3 just convinced me even more. I haven't pre-ordered it yet, but that's just because I'm broke right now. But I will be pre-ordering the game. And you guys know me, I don't pre-order a lot. There are really a handful of titles that I pre-order because I believe in the franchises that much that I know that I'm pretty much going to get my $60 or $80, depending upon whether I want a digital deluxe edition. But I feel like I'm going to get my money's worth, and that's when I pre-order. I will be pre-ordering Shadow of the Tomb Raider. I'm really looking forward to completing that game. I've enjoyed the entire reboot series, like I said, and I can't wait to see how that story moves forward, you know. And there are a handful of games that I do that with, you know. Last of Us 2, that's a done deal as soon as I have.
Yes.
That's a done deal. I need to know what's going on with Ellie. I need to be part of her story as it moves forward. And that, you know, again, hat tip to Naughty Dog. They've done a fantastic job with leading with interesting characters, great acting, because I don't even want to call it voice acting anymore because so much of that is mocap. That is great actors acting well and delivering a story that I want to see how it ends. And I want to go along on that journey. And so I'm so excited to see where now older Ellie goes and what her relationship with Joel is. Because it's, you know, I think they said canon-wise it's like 4 or 5 years after Last of Us, when we left off at the end of that game.
Yeah, okay.
So that puts Ellie at about like 18 or 19.
Yes.
So that's past high school age. So Joel is also, you know, the 4 or 5 years older. And, you know, obviously some things must have come to light. I don't know if they have or not, but I want to. I want to know what their relationship is. I want to know how Ellie moves forward because there's all kinds of conjecture that's out there right now that, you know, you're going to be time hopping in this game, you know, between places, because it was even seen a little bit in the E3 reveal where you're going from being in the barn at the dance to when Ellie's playing and running through that forest mission, that Ellie looks younger in one of those situations. So there's a thought out there that in this game, you're jumping through present time and flashbacks that Ellie is having. And the rumor, and what seems to be going around a lot, is that Joel is dead.
Okay.
And that Ellie is on a revenge path.
Oh, to
take out the people that
took out Joel. So
I don't know if that's true or not. There's also a group of people that think that it's not Joel that's dead, but the girl that Ellie kisses in the reveal trailer, because there's a bracelet that she's wearing when they're dancing in the barn, and when it flashed to Ellie
killing that
stabbing that dude in the neck,
yeah,
she's wearing the bracelet.
I mean, okay, but that can infer different things, because, you know, like, if they're at this, if they're at this compound where, like, there are some people who are like, we won't kill other people and eat them, and we're gonna, like, try to coexist in some type of society and some type of civilization, because the whole world's gone to shit, you know, and if Ellie, you know, with her survival skills is, like, one of those people who goes out and scavenges and, like, goes and gets things. Like, I could totally see myself being, like, if this was, like, a real situation and my husband was going out, though granted, I totally think it'd be me and not him. But I'd be like, oh, please take my token in your favor. Like, keep this with
me. Right. Like, so, I don't know that... I agree. I don't know that she's
gone. So, I mean, could that happen in the narrative? Absolutely. Could she be on a revenge path for either of them? Absolutely. However, I feel like if they really wanted to use a narrative to resonate with us as the player, it's a lot easier for them. It'd be an easy sell for them to have something have happened to Joel, because we have gone through that story with Joel and Ellie in the first part. And don't get me wrong, like, we all have had people that we love and cherish and we would do anything for. So, like, yeah, if Ellie, like, was like, hey, I'm gay and I have a beautiful partner and something happened to my partner, yeah, I'd be pissed about it. Like, I'd be like, let's go, Ellie. Let's go take out some people. But I feel like for a true pull of everyone, like, whatever's going down is going down. Oh, well, if something went off, something happened to Joel, people are going to stand the fuck up.
The only reason why I'm leaning a little bit more heavily to something having happened to the girl is, you got to remember the trailer that we've seen, the teaser, the stinger that we saw before this one, where we were walking through this house and there's just dead guys everywhere and Ellie's sitting in the room playing guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And Joel comes in. Baby girl, what happened?
But if this story is not happening linearly, we don't know where in the timeline that's happened.
Right. So that's why I'm saying.
So that could be something else entirely.
Hold on. Let me just finish the rest of my thought.
I'm sorry.
Because the line that she delivers is, I'm going to kill every last one of them. And it's all human beings in the house. And so, like, we had talked about this. I was like, so what happened to somebody that made Ellie go off and want to kill all these people? Because it wasn't clickers she was killing. And Joel was there checking in on her. And she just had the look of someone that wanted vengeance on her face. What I can't remember, and I didn't go back and look at the video, so I really should have looked at that trailer before now, was whether or not when she's playing guitar, if she has that bracelet on. Because,
like I said, it could go either way.
I do think that the game is definitely going to be about Ellie trying to get. She's seeking vengeance, obviously, because she is pissed as shit.
You know who else was really pissed as shit and was seeking vengeance? Joel.
Joel was really not seeking vengeance as much as just getting his daughter back at the end of the game. Because, like, after Sarah died, like, Joel was just lost. And Joel was just surviving. Like, he wasn't really making connections with anybody.
But he wasn't, but then, like, when he freaking imprinted on Ellie,
then he was in heavy protect mode. And even then, I wouldn't say that was necessarily... Well, it depends on how you play the end.
Yeah. I don't know.
Vengeful.
Because I feel like a person...
Or you could just get Ellie and get the fuck out.
I'm just saying that I think there was a lot more going on under the surface of Joel. Because, I mean, I feel like to get a person to the point where, you know, like, they've had everything they've ever known ripped away from them, and then the tenderest bit of innocence that they have preserved also getting taken by some dudes who shot when they probably shouldn't have shot and whatever.
Yup.
Like, he had a lot of anger. Like, there was a lot there. Like, yes, he wasn't like a volcano erupting, but I definitely felt like it drove him a lot. And I think that's where his survival instincts come from, because he's like, well, I've only got me now, so I ain't gonna let them, like, I ain't going out without the hardest of fights. And, like, and he always brought it. Like, it was never a half-assed thing with Joel. And then he finds Ellie and has this kinship with her, or develops it over time. And then it's like, I couldn't protect my daughter, but you're now my surrogate daughter. So, like, I get that chance again. And then you saw that feverishness. You saw that raw pride. So, it's been there. And then he, you know, kind of implants this on Ellie. And granted, Ellie kind of had that from the beginning, because we saw it in the downloadable content with her and Michaela, when, like, they all got cornered after their cute little kiss session and shit. Mm-hmm. And whatever. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, I think it was always kind of an integral part deep down in her, and I think she just needed a catalyst. And I feel that, don't get me wrong, the love of my life, if something ever happened to him, I would go fucking postal. Like, it would happen. I could completely tell you, things would get burned down, I'd probably end up in prison, and I would be somebody's prison bitch. Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. I might act a fool and then get myself put in solitary and just be a batshit crazy person. I don't know. I feel like for the narrative to affect us, they would have to give us enough of their backstory for us to feel like, oh man, this was like the one for Ellie. Because, you know, like, this could, you know, not that I feel like Ellie's the kind of girl who, like, just, you know, sleeps around with other girls. Like, I don't think that that's her deal. Like, I think she's like a penguin and she, like, commits to life. Like, she gets the pebble and she does the whole thing. So, mm-hmm. I mean, like, but I'd want to see that investment. Like, I'd want to see them grow and all that stuff. And I know in that trailer that we saw from E3, like, you kind of saw some of that. But, like, I would want to see more of that, so that when that inevitable plot twist happens, that I'm like, all right, I'm ready to go on this journey with you. Like, I feel like this is something I would, like, I'd want to be like, I would do that too, let's go. Instead of, oh, this is just a plot convenience to make Ellie go nuts. Like, I want this to be as organic and genuine as possible for me to buy into it. And I mean, for one, Naughty Dog has always been really great about that. So they could go either way. They really could. I just know that for me personally, if something happened to Joel on my watch, I think I would go on a feverish rampage of murder. So I...
Yeah.
It's like, no one touches my dad. Like, I feel
no
like...
No one touches
my dad. So, like... So I feel like that... I feel like there's just an already stronger thread there that they could potentially narratively manipulate. Personally. But either way, like... Last of Us.
And here's the thing, just like that I'll throw in there. Who's to say they don't do both? Especially if you're jumping through time.
That's true.
What would unhinge Ellie more?
I mean, both the loves of her life. So if this is.
And then be put into the situation that Joel was in that his entire world is upended from him.
I mean, like, if she's like 18, 19, like, Joel's what? Like. Late 50s, early 60s, maybe a little bit older.
Joel would probably be, yeah, he would be mid-late 50s.
But I mean,
Joel, when we met Joel, I don't remember his exact age. I mean, he was salt and pepper, but, like, I would have put Joel probably between, like, 48 and 52. So if we're 4 years down, right, then like we're looking at 50s, mid to late 50s.
And I mean, and this isn't, like, you know, a gentleman who has been able to age gracefully. He's had to throw his body through the gauntlet. He's had to sit there and keep himself in peak physical condition because the world is like, fuck you. And he's like, no, fuck you. So, I mean, eventually all...
And they're still, you know, infected all over the place. Exactly. New types of infected. So it's not like...
And unfortunately, as much as we'd love for Joel to be, like, immortal and to be able to survive all of this, you know...
Don't say anything about my dad.
we're all human, and in this universe, you know.
No, Joel is superhuman.
No.
Yes.
Once again, I feel like every time we get a dad-like figure in these games, you and I. Like,
don't say anything about Beard Dad.
We both sit there, and we both are on different sides of the fence.
He's survived so many things. He survived being so hurt in that basement.
And no one is diminished.
And then he saved us from David. He's superhuman.
Yes, he did. Well, I mean Ellie held her own for as long as she possibly could, right?
She did. She did a really good job. But still, Dad saved us.
But I'm just saying.
Because he loves us. He went through the pain.
No one said that Joel doesn't love Ellie. No one said that Dad doesn't love us. But I'm just saying.
Dad can do anything.
Great men sometimes, all great men fall eventually.
La la la.
I mean,
Bruce Wayne.
You were right about Joel. Sully not dying, but I just feel like in this world where death is everywhere. That it could happen.
I'm mentally preparing myself for Joel not to make it.
I mean, I'm just saying,
I don't know if it's going to be from the start.
No, I do think I imagine if they play their cards right, they don't want to throw that ace too early. That'll be something that like Ellie's partner, like, she gets it, and Ellie's like, I'm going to kill them all, and Joel's like, I'm in on the ride, kid, and like they're like 3/4 all the way through, and at that curing point, like they happen to come across like a clicker or something, and that clicker is just one bite too fast, or some other threat that isn't necessarily human comes into the mix, and maybe they're not foreseeing it, and like it's about to take out Ellie, and Joel does the daddy thing and jumps in to rescue, and while he saves her, he sacrifices himself. I could totally see him doing that. Mm-hmm. Like, he will go out in a pure blaze of fatherly glory, that there will be no dry eye in the house if that is the route they decide to take, which I would be okay with that, because that would just, you know, confirm more of his character to me as the player and all of that. So however Naughty Dog wants to swing this bat, they are gonna connect. So
I'm going up at bat. Like, so I'm taking the bat, okay? And I'm gonna get on base, okay? And I'm gonna slide into home. I just might need lots of hugs afterwards.
Yes, I mean, that is the thing.
But that's what Naughty Dog do. So.
That's what Naughty Dog do.
That's what they do every time. Okay. I mean, I know how much we fought over
Sully.
Uncharted 4.
We did,
Sully.
And you were right at the end.
Thank you.
But like I said, I'll be the first one to admit when I'm wrong. But you know, sometimes I'm not wrong.
Right, sometimes you're not wrong. And I admit when I'm wrong, okay? But you were adamant.
I was, because I thought they would go there, and maybe they had a plot line where that happened, and they're like, no, this is too on the nose.
It just doesn't feel right. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, because that was my big, really, objection to doing it, is that that would be too on the nose. And I didn't feel like Naughty
Dog. But this world is different from Uncharted. Like, this is literally a day-by-day, like, there are the top hunters who are going out are being taken out.
But none of the things that they've done yet in Last of Us,
I think it's very
either
much like
the DLC
the Walking
or
Dead.
The full game.
They're all just walking until they're they're all already dead.
Everything feels natural. It doesn't feel like an on the note. Like, at no point through Last of Us or through the DLC did I felt like I was being led through the nose through a narrative. So I want to be very clear. Like, Uncharted very much felt like I was being led through a narrative, because you were. Even as open as Uncharted 4 was, it still wasn't really a true sandbox open world, because you did have like a linear critical path that you had to walk down in order to complete the game. Like, if you wanted to do the side missions, go for it. But really, it was point A to point B to point C to point D to woo!
Right.
End game. Right?
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that, because you do have to have a beginning, middle, and end for a story to be a story. Right?
Right.
But Uncharted had always been that. And so I felt like looking at what Nathan and Sully's relationship was, especially after going through young Drake and how he got paired up with Sully in the first place in 3, and that all that stupid Marlowe shit, but whatever. Through all of that, I felt like, okay, you have done way too much work in this entire series to make Sully Drake's surrogate dad. And then you did way too much to explain to me why Nate needed that. You know, the whole Sam disappearing thing after being saved from the boarding school, renaming myself, spoilers, all that stuff. I felt like Naughty Dog did way too much to show me there's the family you're born to and the family you make, that it would be too on the nose to then take away the family that you make. Right? Because they'd already hinted at that before with, ooh, did Chloe die? Ooh, did Elena die? Ooh, Elena's not around. No, actually, you married Elena. Ha ha, surprise, surprise. But you're actually on your second go-round with Elena because your first go-round, you kind of fucked it up a little bit. Ha ha, ha ha, you did that. Ha ha, fix it. Okay, now you're fixing it. Like, they did too much to really focus on the family that you make probably really being your best resource, that I felt like it would be too on the nose to, at the end, then take Sully away. Because what does that really accomplish?
Right. You're right.
Right. So, that being said, you are absolutely correct. Last of Us 2 is a completely different universe. There is a real consequence just because of how the world is and the story that we're in, that it wouldn't be on the nose to take Joel away. It would be what would then become of Ellie and how does her life story trajectory change when this loss, which the world has already told me is inevitable, because that's the whole structure of the game, right? This virus is turning people into these mutants. It's spreading like wildfire. We don't have a cure. We think we might have a key to a cure. It's walking around, and we got to kill it to even get that.
To even get the opportunity to test if it's what we need. To test
if it is actually a cure or not, because it could fail, okay? There's no guarantee that it is, in fact, actually a cure, but we don't know. But the world that you are in is one that, at any moment, something can pop up and take away the person you love. So it wouldn't be on the nose, out of, you know, like,
right,
just for turning the story to happen in Last of Us 2. But it's the when, how, and why does it change or affect Ellie? That would be the exploration part. And that would be the reason for it happening. And so, I don't disagree. I think that Joel is going to bite it in this game. I just don't know when, because I don't have a full sense yet of the timelines. Because, you know, Naughty Dog has shown me now in 2 different trailers that they're jumping back and forth through time. So, it just makes me more hungry to just get into this game so I can be part of that exploration. And I think that that's a really great earmark of a fantastic game. Because we've really only seen 2 trailers and a little bit of gameplay.
So we'll just have to sit peacefully and find out.
I don't do waiting peacefully well. It's an area that I am working on trying to
slowly but improve surely
about myself. But I want it all, and I want it now.
You want the whole world and you want it now.
I do. I want the whole world and I want it now. But enough about me. I think you have some things to talk about.
Well, I mean,
so I'm gonna shut up actually, and I'm gonna drink some of this delicious iced tea. So I'm gonna sip my tea while you talk.
All right.
Go ahead, girl.
So that was a great short visit to Tangentville.
Yeah, it's only like a 15-minute tangent.
No big deal.
I think after the 25-minute mark, we can't really call it a tangent anymore. It's a segment.
It's just the show.
I think we just have to accept that about ourselves now. If we go over 25 minutes, it's a segment, not a tangent.
So I wanted to talk about this game that I actually talked a little bit about back when we went to PAX East this year.
Yes.
It's not necessarily a new game, but it got a pretty decent update that really kind of kicked it up a notch. So I kind of want to give it its proper dues. So, you know, we've played Overcooked on Ash. We have,
and we will play Overcooked 2.
We will play Overcooked 2. And at the time that I started playing Overcooked, my husband was also like, there's another cooking game that I think you would like. And I was like, get the fuck out of here. Overcooked is my life. Nothing will ever compare. And then he was adamant that I play this game called Cook, Serve, Delicious. So, needless to say...
what?
Cook, Serve, Delicious is the name of the game. And believe it or not, I'm talking about its sequel, Cook, Serve, Delicious 2. And I didn't play...
Electric Boogaloo?
And I didn't play the first one. I came in Cook, Serve, Delicious 2 because I think I liked the UI mapping of it a little bit better. But let me give you a little bit of its history before I get into why I'm talking about it on the show today. So it is a restaurant simulation game. The sequel came out in 2007. It got developed by Vertigo Gaming, or Vertigo Games, depends on how you really want to call it. And they developed it for the PC and the Mac. And you can also play it on Steam. Obviously, that's any type of PC hub where you can get downloadable digital games, you'll most likely find it. And I actually kind of really dig it. So it's not exactly a straight comparison to Overcooked, because in Overcooked, like, you have this top-down, and you have your little chefs who are running around, darting around, grabbing, you know, vegetables and making things and cooking things. And, I mean, yeah, you are still cooking things in Cook, Serve, Delicious, but it is very much like a time management, ticking clock, you know, multi-element thing that you have to do, but you don't ever see your chef, really. But the whole point in Cook, Serve, Delicious is that you have a restaurant, you are a chef, you're the chef of Cook, Serve, Delicious, that's the name of your restaurant, and you're actually in a post-apocalyptic world. So things have gone to shit, and, like, people are actually slowly building back society, and one of the things that, like, and one of the things that they're really adamant about is food. So food is, like, your calling card in this world.
It's needed.
Being a chef, you know, like, you want to be a good chef because there isn't a lot of food around. So your goal is to have the best restaurant in this one tower where people work, live, and, like, they do all of it in this one tower. There isn't much else going on in the world because, you know, a catastrophic event wiped out a lot of civilization. So you're just trying to put your pieces back together. And through the course of the game, you level up and you get things for your restaurant and you eventually build it up to be, like, the best restaurant in the tower. And people are just like, you're so amazing. Yes, I am. And you kind of live out that motif. Granted, in the sequel, something has happened to the tower and they've had to rebuild it. So you actually lose your first restaurant. So you have to essentially do it all over again. But they've kind of made it a little bit more mainstream where you have your main campaign where you're trying to build up your restaurant with the few dishes that you have stuff that you can do. But you also have this other segment in this game where you're allowed to pretty much cook at other people's restaurants to then hopefully better serve your restaurant when you go back to it. Like, you go to a Chinese restaurant and learn Chinese food and then possibly bring a Chinese dish to your restaurant. And that's kind of what you do. The thing I really dug about this game was that, once again, like, narrative is really kind of key for me right now. And this game has such a quiet narrative that, like, you could completely miss it because you're so obsessed with what you're cooking that you're not paying attention to the few, like, you know, cryptic emails you're getting from other people who are working in the office. And, you know, you've got these random people emailing you because they want to show you pictures of their cat because they haven't seen a human in, like, 20 years. And like, the story is just so out there. And it really kind of makes you think of, like, what human interactions would be like in a, you know, a post-apocalyptic world that has some semblance of internet. Like, it would not be the same. And they're playing around with that a lot. And I really kind of dug that. So when I heard they were coming to PAX East, I was like, well, what are they bringing? Because they just had announced and they had just kind of pseudo-released, you know, the sequel. And I got a chance to sit down at the Vertigo Games booth at PAX East, and I got to play their latest update, which is now currently available. And it's a free update, so you don't have to pay for it, which is pretty awesome. But everyone who played this game was like, we think it's really funny that, like, you've got pizza places and Chinese places and Greek places and, like, Tex-Mex places, but you don't have any, like, coffee shops.
Especially no cafes.
No. Like, there are places that you could get, like, a coffee, but it was, like, pretty much like an Americano. Like,
you mean Starbucks didn't survive?
No, right. Exactly. The team at Vertigo Gaming was like, you know what? That is right. Like, eventually we would want to start, you know, getting our coffees back. And they decided that in this update that they were going to bring baristas, or pretty much coffee shops, back to this post-apocalyptic universe.
Yeah, because I'm going to tell you right now, like, if I can't get a coffee someplace,
I'm jumping off the building. Like, that's it.
Everybody's getting cut.
So sure enough, in the barista update, they've updated a lot of their food, because, like, this is not as simple as, you know, Overcooked, where you took three tomatoes, you chopped them up and you put them in a pot and you had soup. Like, right. This is literally like, take chicken, smack chicken, season chicken, fried chicken, plate chicken. Like, and it's all fast paced. Like, this is not...
That's worked a chicken. Got it.
Right. And then it's all like, oh, cereals. Well, this person wants Fruity Loops with milk and bananas. This person wants Fiber Blast with skim milk. And, like, it's just...
Fiber Beast!
And, yeah, literally, like, it's Fiber Blast. Literally, like, these are all, like, multi-leveled steps that all have to happen rapid fire. And, like, you want to do this right, because obviously the better your meal, the more delicious is it, and the more money you get. So, like, it makes some sense. So when I heard about the barista update, I was like, oh no, like, they want us to act like baristas for Starbucks. And I'm like, I'm a simple girl at my Starbucks. Like, for Starbucks, I'm a caramel macchiato, either hot or iced with extra caramel. Like, I'm not a venti grande mochaccino, no whip, half foam. Like, I'm none of that. And at Dunkin's, I'm a medium hot regular. That's coffee, cream, and sugar. Like, I'm not on that elevated tip. But I was curious about it because I feel like a lot of people, one, don't ever really pay attention to the amount of skill and timing and precision it takes to execute the type of drinks that Starbucks and the fancy fluty tooty coffee shops do. There's a lot going on in them. And I was like, I want to appreciate this better. And this team really took the time and the initiative to get that chaos that is in a coffee shop right. And when I sat down, they're like, so how good are you? And I'm like, I'm fairly good at this game. Me and my husband play it a lot. And I'm like, I think I've got this. And he's like, you're not ready. And I was like, oh yeah? And he throws me into it, and I lost my goddamn mind. Because literally, like, you're pouring your foam, and you have to pour, like, 2 seconds, and you have to steam the foam for, like, 5 seconds, and it's all that timed. Like, it's that accurate. So the minute I have my espresso down, I go to do my whip, my espresso's overburnt, I have to start over. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yes. He's like, and they did that with all of their frozen lattes, their hot lattes, their frozen drinks, their treats. Like, all of it is on this elevated level from everything else that we've seen in this game, which is already, you know, kind of stress-inducing, but in that fun release of endorphins kind of way. At least some people see it that way. But this really kind of hurts, because your whole internal sense of time and pacing that the game has already helped you build and establish within the first two are completely thrown out of the window with the inclusion of coffee, which I think is so interesting that this one thing could completely redefine the pacing of a store or a restaurant. So I've been playing that Ignazium. Is that the right? Ignazium?
Close. You just say I've been playing it like
a lot. I've been playing it like a lot. Ignaz a lot. And, and I'm still shit. Like, I would never walk into a Dunkin' Donuts or a Starbucks in real life and be like, I could do this. I play Cook Serve Delicious. I got no. This game has taught me that, you know what? You just shut up, you pay for your coffee, and you let the experts work. You little girl. take your caramel macchiato and shove it where the sun don't shine.
Be happy that there are people that can make you a caramel macchiato.
Be grateful
don't worry
that there
about
there are masters, there are gods among men who
how the sausage
who
is made.
Who deign to
appreciate that
to make
it was
you
made.
Your caffeine, because you would never be able to survive if you had to make it. So if you liked Overcooked or you liked that whole restaurant time management aspect and you haven't played Cook, Serve, Delicious or the sequel, I strongly suggest you do that. I also just highly recommend that when you get the option to go to the coffee shop, if you get through that part of the game, that you mentally steel yourself for utter disappointment and shame. Because 'cause you will have it, but you'll be a better person for it. And that's it. It's fun, but it's also like I want to rip my hair out and die.
Okay. Well, that's a thing.
Yeah.
I don't want you to rip your hair out. You have very nice hair.
Thank you.
I will just quickly end with one thing that I want to touch on, and that's Soul Calibur 6. Now, if you've ever listened to a podcast episode or know me in person, you know that fighting games is my shiz.
Yes. Yep. Yes, like, it is.
There are a lot of games that I enjoy, but you put me in front of an arcade console or a good fighting stick and put up a good fighting game, not even a great fighting game, and I will be a happy chiquitita. Okay. Dead or Alive, absolutely love it. I've loved Soul Calibur since the Soul Edge days. I originally owned the original Soul Edge. I believe I still have my Soul Edge PlayStation disc because that's how OG I am and beloved. I have all my original Tekken games. I love fighters. Virtua Fighter, you name it. Soul Calibur is probably one of my more favorite franchises of fighting games that made it to home console, simply because it is just so balanced and has always been, for me, a beautiful game. Every time it's come out on console, it's come out at a point where they're really taking advantage of everything graphically the console can do to deliver a very responsive, very balanced as far as having a attack, counterattack, parry, finely tuned, because when those things are not tuned well in a game, it just basically makes it unplayable when it comes to a fighter. That the Soul Calibur team has just always done a fantastic job. And so it's one of the things that I've always enjoyed from originally the Namco and now the Bandai Namco team. I just, every time they come out with a game, I'm like, here's some money. Please don't disappoint me. And I have been a little disappointed a couple of times, but not heavily so that, like, I walked away from the franchise. So as soon as I heard that the Soul still burns, I was in and I was ready to give up some more money, and I stay ready to give up money. So where we're at right now is that the game is coming out on October 19th this year, so I'll be ready for holiday. It'll be on Windows, it'll be on the Xbox, and it will be on PlayStation 4. So obviously it'll be in all of the 4K versions of those machines as well, which means it'll be even more stunning and gorgeous in 4K than it already is. Most of my favorite characters are returning. If you've ever played a Soul Calibur game, you know that you kind of have your core, I would say, 7 characters now in the game. And then they usually add a couple of surprise characters. They did when they added the Star Wars characters. That was really funny to be Darth Vader fighting Kalik. But, you know, you do what you do. But returning in the game, obviously my girl, Ivy. I love that character so much. And not just because, I mean, all the female characters are good-looking characters. But Ivy just kind of is walking sex.
Yes. Has always kind of been.
Always kind of been walking sex. But also is one of those characters that if you can master her ranged attacks and put together really good combo chains, she's almost unbeatable and impregnable. And I love characters like that because they frustrate people to no ends. So I've always worked to be very good with Ivy. But Ivy's back. And I kind of enjoyed her story a little bit as well when they were doing the story thing. But Ivy's back. Kalik is back. Maxie's back. Mitsurugi Nightmare. Siegfried is back.
Oh.
And Sophitia. Taki. Zhanghua is going to be in the game. Yoshimitsu is going to be in the game. Zaslamel's in the game. Zaslamel is probably my least favorite Soul Calibur character. I know that there's a lot of people that love him, and I know why they love him. But for me, like, he's my least favorite character, so I wasn't really excited to see him in the roster. But I know a lot of people are. So Zaslamel is going to be in there. But what's really cool, at least for me, is that in this game, Geralt from The Witcher is in the game.
Huh.
So it'll be really interesting to see, like, what his story is going to be, why he's after the Soul Edge. I don't know. I'm excited for this game. And it is going to have multiplayer online, which will be fantastic. So you'll be able to battle people, whether you have couch coop options or not. Because, you know, it's hard to get people over to your place sometimes. But I feel like for a fighting game, like, online is okay. But I really don't like getting my ass whooped that much.
So me neither.
Play couch coop.
It is not something I appreciate.
I know you don't play her too, but it's okay.
Yeah.
You'll get good, Scrub. But I'm really excited about it. And then, like I said, it comes out in October. So know that I will be talking ad nauseum about the game.
Another one.
Okay, Khaled. But I'm very excited for the game. I'm happy to see that Bandai Namco is putting more time into it. I will more than likely also be playing the new Dead or Alive game when it comes out. But I'm hype. So hype for Soul Calibur 6. So be on the lookout because I'm probably going to be talking about some of my favorite characters in some write-ups. And probably in some videos as well that will be popping up on YouTube as we get closer to the game coming out. But I'm curious to know, like, because everybody, when you play a fighting game, you have your favorite character. Like I said, Ivy's mine. Hit us up on our social and let me know what your favorite character from any fighting game, but, you know, especially from Soul Calibur, but any fighting game, because it's always fun to share who your favorite is and why. So it's time for us to wrap up this podcast episode. I hope that you enjoyed it. If you do, please make sure that you subscribe to our podcast. You can find it on our site, electricsisterhood.com, along with some other great interviews and reviews and previews of all things game and anime and manga on our site. So please make sure that you bookmark it. You check out content from the entire team all week long popping up there, as well as our podcast. You can also find links on our site to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, which you can do either on the desktop through the iTunes application itself or through the podcast application on your iOS device by searching for the Eshcast and subscribing. You can also get our podcast through Stitcher Radio, through Google Play, on VogNetwork.com, and pretty much most podcast aggregators out there will have our show. So make sure that you subscribe. And that way, as soon as we put out new episodes every week, you can get a hold of them and take a listen to them and make your commute plus 5 more awesome. In addition to that, like I said, you can engage with us on our social. If there's stuff that you want to hear us talk about or review, or you want to see us play, or you want to see us do a let's play, or you just want to like be like, you should check this out, then please make sure that you engage with us. You can hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/landofesh. You can leave us a message. You can comment on any of our content that we're sharing. You can always like, comment, and share. We appreciate those because that helps us be able to put more content out on the page. So please engage with our stuff and share. You can also hit us up on Instagram. We are at ESH News on Instagram, and we've got all kinds of stuff that we're sharing on that channel. So please throw us a like, double tap it if you like it. And you can always DM us with anything you'd like us to check out or whatever comments you want to share, like your favorite fighting game character of all time and why. You can also hit us up on Twitter at ESH News, and we share a lot of content on that channel. Our articles as well as stuff that we're reading that we just find interesting. We aggregate it all on our Twitter. So please make sure that you give us some follows and some likes and become fans across all of our social channels. We put out videos on YouTube as well as on our social channels. So please make sure that you give us a subscription, a subscribe, and you hit the little notification bell over on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/othersisterhood. See, don't you like the branding? So clean. So clean. And if you enjoy what we do, then please make sure that you check out all the great sites and content creators that are part of our network. That includes B3Crew.com and our homie King Baby Duck's podcast, No Borders, No Race, that he puts out new episodes every other week. It's also available in iTunes to subscribe to. So please make sure that you bookmark, check out his site. He uploads videos on our YouTube channel as well. Does some fantastic unboxings that you'll want to check out for sure. We also have our homie Hamsterman2049 running SmashedRook.com, where he does Let's Plays every week on Wednesdays, typically at 9 Eastern. You can find the link on his site. You can find it on our Facebook page. But please make sure that you check it out. Jump into his chat and be part of the experience. Plays old games and new. They're really fantastic. So please, please, please make sure that you check him out. Also, one of my more favorite humans on the planet, Phil the Issues Guy with Phil's Recap and Review Show over on YouTube. Definitely give him a like, give him a subscribe, hit that notification bell, and then just kick back and be part of the magic, because his recap shows are probably my favorite recap shows on the planet, hands down. Definitely make sure that you check him out. Check out his entire archive of recaps for The Sopranos, for Vikings, for pretty much everything nerdy and out there. He's recapping it. You want to be part of it. You can call in, be in chat, be part of his recaps live, which I don't know a whole lot of people that do that. So definitely make sure you check him out and his website to see his entire archive over at issuesprogram.com. And then last but certainly not least, our homies over at nerdcrave.com, keeping you up to date with all the stuff that nerds crave, from comic books and anime to manga and more. If it's nerdy, then the dudes over at nerdcrave.com are talking about it. So please make sure that you check out their site and their content. Bookmark us all. Hit us all up on social. We're pretty active all over the place. And we love hearing from you guys and chatting with you about this stuff that we're passionate about, just like you. So with that, it's time to wrap up this podcast. As always, I am Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And until next time,
titties.